From Peoria Public Radio, I'm Tanya Kuntz. For the next half hour, we'll be talking with David Kennedy, author of Don't Shoot, One Man, A Street Fellowship, and the End of Gun Violence in Inner City America. David Kennedy is the director of the Center for Crime Prevention and Control at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City. His book and its title are the genesis of the Don't Shoot Peoria initiative. The book has been the selection for a special Peoria Reads One Book, One Community project, and it's been the topic of a month-long series here on WCBU. It culminated with Kennedy spending part of last week in Peoria. Before he departed, Mr. Kennedy sat down and talked with us about his Don't Shoot strategy and the Peoria initiative. What have you seen while you've been boots on the ground in the city of Peoria?
The same thing you see everywhere. So this is one of the most important things that we've learned about the violence. And it's really hard for people to get their heads around, because we're so attuned to differences. And some cities are bigger than others. Some cities are poorer than others. Some cities are more urban than others. We have racial and ethnic differences. We have political differences. We have all kinds of differences. And the years have shown that none of those differences really make any difference where the violence is concerned. You get to the point where you start realizing that really the only thing that's different is the nature of the housing stock. By which I mean things look different. They're just not different. Mm-hmm. And the basics that Don't Shoot presents, and that a lot of the conversation has been about while I've been here, have been just three or four things that turn out to be central about the violence. So there's the fact that the violence comes out of the street groups, you know, the gangs and the drug crews, and people have different labels for these pretty low-level local groups.
You said Peoria has about 15 to 20.
That's what I've been told, and that fits with the size of the city and the level of the violence issue here. Mm-hmm. I would have predicted that coming in, just because that's kind of where the ruler would fall.
So not
could
really,
have, could have been different, but
not really
turns
an
out
anomaly
not,
that way.
No, not a bit. Okay. So the verities, there's the centrality of the groups. There's the nature of the guys in the groups. They are young men. They are overwhelmingly young minority men. They are fantastically criminally active, so they end up with really extensive criminal records. There is the kind of vendetta, honor code quality of the violence. So you get lots of back and forth violence between the groups about girls, about disrespect, about hard looks, about little insults. What's going on is no different than what has gone on in this country and lots of other places around, you know, little clans and honor culture.
Okay.
Which is simply that as from time immemorial, you end up with young men with this attitude that the enemy of my friend is my enemy. And if somebody undercuts my dignity, I have to do something physical to redress that grievance.
Okay.
And really, that's all you need to know.
Okay.
Because that's what goes on.
Okay.
And then, you know, there are these shadings of the drug business and making money on the street. And I had a long conversation yesterday with somebody who was convinced that it was all about hip-hop. And, you know, so there are all these little facets that have some merit. But the bottom of it, it's really simple. It's groups of young men living in desperate conditions, desperate about their own safety, you know, under real threat and at real risk from other people. They don't feel like they've got anybody to turn to, and bad stuff happens.
Okay.
You know, it's just, we don't need to make it any more complicated than that. There's the fact that as bad as that is, in the worst places, not many young men behave like that. And we've talked about the math of that. It's usually only 5% of the young men, even in the hottest neighborhoods. It'll be under 0.5% of the population of the city. It's a vanishingly small problem. As serious as it is.
Yeah. You've talked about that being about 5% of, I'm trying to think of what context you put that in.
Yeah.
But it's
so,
a very small population.
Young men have their high risk years, and there's nothing very precise about that, but it's basically 18 to 25 or 26. Yeah. If you look at that short list, groups, young men, very active young men, respect culture, back and forth violence, all that kind of thing, it doesn't matter where you go. That's what you see. You could be with Hispanic crews in the San Fernando Valley in L.A. You could be with the Norteño Sereno gangs in Salinas, California. You could be with the Vice Lords in Chicago. You could be with the Lao gangs in Minneapolis. We're discovering you could be with the juvenile white crews on the housing estates in Glasgow where they fight pitched battles with edged weapons. It's all the same. Those facts are the same everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In the time that you've been in Peoria talking about Don't Shoot and the Peoria Reads program, you've also met with community leaders, right? You met with federal prosecutors, state prosecutors, local law enforcement.
Yep.
And I imagine some state and federal law enforcement also span that gamut.
Rode with the police.
Yeah.
Met with some of the city's most prominent black ministers, sat with mothers of murdered children. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you see reflecting that way that Peoria has to bring to bear on the violent crime issue under the Don't Shoot strategy that your book outlines?
The most important thing that a city needs is the will to do this. If they've got that, they can make everything else happen. And I make that sound simple, and it's not simple. It's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. But one of the points the book keeps making is it's just work. It's now work we know how to do. Mm-hmm. And what keeps it from being done is never the resources or the capacity at the local level. Mm-hmm. That's there if people want to mobilize it. Mm-hmm. What stands in the way is different versions of a lack of will. That's different in different places. There are lots of things that can kill this.
Yeah. So could you summarize that in the difference between personalities and principles? The principles of a job, the principles of law enforcement and applying the laws are the principles of that job no matter what.
Right.
The personalities and the perspectives involved, it sounds to me like largely what you've been saying is the difference between this making a go and not. So the difference between principles and personalities.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. So you said doing law enforcement is law enforcement, if people decide to do it. The same thing's true for the other kind of operating elements of the Don't Shoot work. Having communities make a clear stand. Any community can do that if it wants to. Providing the social services that the 5% need, you very rarely find a jurisdiction that can't step up and do that if it chooses to. What really is different between places is a kind of overall sense of commitment and engagement. And I'll talk about that in a second. And then beneath that, there is the willingness of people to work together to execute that commitment. And you get a feel after a while for the kind of – if you could say that places have personalities, which really they don't, but they've got cultures and they've got norms and atmospheres and expectations. And you find – some places are kind of clinically depressed. they can't seem almost, you know, you get this almost literal feel. They can't get up in the morning. They can't get out of bed. They can't get anything done. They can't get out of their own way. Mm-hmm. And they'll find endless numbers of reasons not to do what needs to be done. And if you go looking for them, you'll find them. guarantee it. Uh-huh. You find places that are so dysfunctional that if somebody says, okay, we're going to do this, and even if a collection of the right people say that, there's no civic expectation of follow through. There's no accountability. Mm-hmm. And these are places where you look back and there's this litter of big initiatives where nothing ever happened, and that people just expect that.
So a lot of people come from a vantage point like, yeah, why is this going to work? Nothing else has.
Yep.
You hear that a lot. And you heard different versions of that.
Uh-huh.
DMI didn't work. The city blamed us. Right. Ceasefire. We liked that idea for a while. And, you know, and that's a very real voice that you hear from certain people in the community.
Yep, yeah, it is. And there aren't any places without that history when it comes to this issue, because the cold fact is, and the book Don't Shoot has gotten me in a fair amount of trouble because, among other, there are a lot of reasons it's gotten me in trouble. But one of them is that I say very bluntly that essentially none of the things that we have tried around this core violence issue work. And that has really brassed off a lot of people who are committed to things that, in fact, haven't worked. So there may be lots of things in lots of places where the city has said, okay, we're going to do this thing around other issues, and they've pulled it off. Mm-hmm. But if you go looking for the history of initiatives that have been aimed at the homicide and the shooting and the really core chaos, you're going to find this history of things not working, because up until now, that's almost all there's been. And in practice, and so we were talking about the character of places,
mm-hmm.
and we're talking about the sort of high-level dysfunction, this almost clinical depression where cities can't do anything. There are also cities that are still willing, very, very willing to get to work. But even in those places, you will find this brutal legacy of well-intentioned and sort of internally logical and utterly failed initiatives around this issue. And then you get into the second set of kind of facets about whether a place can muster the will to move. And you find then places that cannot work together.
Mm-hmm.
Agencies can't get along. Agencies see this issue as a zero-sum game. And if this office gets somewhere because it has a hand in reducing the killings, that reduces the stature of the other. And so the other won't let that happen. It's obscene, but it's very common. Small p politics. I mean, it's not electoral politics. It's agency politics.
Mm-hmm.
You find places where the relationships between kind of the official world and the unofficial world of the communities
mm-hmm.
is either so toxic or has been kind of brokered in such a way that there are bottlenecks that you just can't get through. But then if those things aren't true, what turns out to be true, and this was evident in our meeting, that as angry as people are at the frustration of the past and very often their real sense of betrayal, it won't stop them from trying again. And the book talks about this. It talks about the extraordinary, ordinary courage of the people in the communities, which unless you're close to them, you can't see it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not political. It's not high profile. It's not on TV.
It's human spirit.
It's It's mm-hmm. human spirit, and it's there. Mm-hmm. And people who of course weren't there, I'll just report that we had a community meeting, and I will say this with loving kindness, but ordinary community people, mm-hmm. not political figures, mm-hmm. Not folks who end up on the evening news, residents and mothers and grandmothers and survivors. And they stood in the middle of the room saying, "Why will this work?" weeping. Mm-hmm. And then they said, "When do we start?" Mm-hmm. And if the official city can get out of the way, and even better is what's happening here, if the official city will be supportive, it turns out those folks will always step forward.
So, at least for the listeners of Peoria Public Radio, people, I think, here are fairly aware that the mayor, the chief of police, the county sheriff, the state's attorney, and the U.S. prosecutor in this area are all solidly behind making this work and making all of the human resources they have at their disposal work together.
Yes.
To make this work. How does that rate compared to the other communities that you've been invited into to see what's going on?
It's never happened before. It is literally unprecedented nationally. So in order to make this work, you have to get to that point. Mm-hmm. And over time, these days, especially now that people can look at this long national record and draw their own conclusions and look at the evaluations and call their friends in similar offices in other cities and get their feedback. These days, most of the time, we expect to get to the point where people will make the commitments and do the work necessary to do the work. I've never been anywhere where when I or one of the people who plays this supportive role nationally, when we first put boots on the ground, it's all done. And that it's all done with the extraordinary level of commitment and excitement that I've actually found here. I've never experienced it.
So where does Peoria go from here to make this a go?
So now the real work starts. Mm-hmm. And the team you've just mentioned has been very explicit about that. I was at Bradley, and the mayor was good enough to introduce me, and he said, "Now we're really starting," and that's right. So the ground has been prepared. Now you need to build the building. And the good thing about that at this point is that the steps from where we are to where we need to be are now very, very well understood. And that same team and I sat up late last night literally doing the Roman numeral one, Roman numeral two checklist on what we do now. And it's a lot of work, but as I keep saying, as the book keeps saying, it's just work. You can do it if you want to. So some of it is really mundane, like getting the right facts about what's going on the neighborhood, which is easy. We know how to do that. Some of it is about looking for I've told the city they need a full-time, professional, seasoned coordinator for this project. We've learned the hard way that you can stand one of these things up, but you won't keep it standing unless it's somebody's full-time job to do so. And cities recognize that now, and they recognize that it's worth the investment.
Mm-hmm. But those would be extra resources. And you have said that your strategy is something that can be done without extra resources, monetary resources. Are you thinking reconnoitering resources that are already there to make that person, to make it a paid position, or like a cooperative? What are you thinking there?
All of those options work. People are doing it in that way. Okay. One of the most common things we're seeing now is that, at least for an initial period, the sort of local foundation world will step up and say, okay, we'll cover this. And the expectation is that that will get folded into the regular city budget. I mean, we're talking about one salary, and I think there are people who work for the city here. There's nothing special about this. Prosecutor Brady asked me yesterday, do we know what the crimes prevented represent fiscally? And one number that comes from the RAND Corporation is that one single homicide costs a city $8 million.
That seems kind of unfathomable.
Well, when you look at what happens when there's a killing, you send people out to secure the scene, you track down witnesses, you prepare prosecutions, you hire the med tech people to scrub the possibly tainted blood off the sidewalk, you mount prosecutions, you et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all of those are very highly paid people. It costs a lot of money. And in a sick way, the non-fatal violence, at least collectively, can cost a lot more, because people who survive and end up quadriplegic and paraplegic and on colostomy bag end up costing the medical community enormous amounts of money for their entire lives.
By the way, that's a number we're going for right now, and it's a difficult number to get at.
I'll tell you what the answer is. It's really big.
I've said that too. I've said, you may have to give me a range.
And, and because there's such variation in what happens to people. But you've heard me say this a lot about many areas in the discussion we've been having. It's always possible to be very sophisticated and sort of endlessly refined about these things. But very often, the simple common sense answer is a pretty good one, and the cost of this kind of violence to cities, to law enforcement, to the medical community, to families, it's just overwhelming. And cities realize that, and stacking one salary against that to make sure you do a good job is not a hard call.
Yeah, absolutely. There are the real cost, and then there are the moral cost.
Oh, there's that too. Yeah, that's right. So we were talking about steps to implementation. The city needs to put together a central working group of the key constituencies, law enforcement, community figures, social service providers. And that group needs to become the center of gravity for figuring out the detailed implementation of all the basics. That's the way it always works. And
does Peoria not already have that?
It does not.
Okay.
So it's got a really good beginning
okay.
because the law enforcement team has been working together so closely on this. But it's really important that people understand that this is not a law enforcement initiative.
Okay.
It's an initiative with law enforcement in it.
Okay.
But the community piece is absolutely as important, and the social service piece is really important. And those folks are being identified now, and those conversations are happening. But all of that needs to come together. And when that's in place, when ideally there is that project coordinator and when that central group is convened, there are lots of us around the country who are living to help those folks do this work. That's what I do. That's what my office does. There are lots of other people around the country who are completely dedicated to this, and all of us are working by putting these supportive networks together. And a lot of the nodes in those in that network are the cities. They are, some of them have been doing this for 15 years. Some of them are mature and it's working. Some of them are just getting started, but we're all trying to help each other.
Lisa is our office manager, and violent crime has had a very real impact in her life. Her son was at the Riverplex last week, and a gun was pulled on him, held to his head. He was robbed.
This was when?
Last week.
Last week.
Riverplex. That's a public place.
Yeah.
Lisa has a member of her family who was shot to death in the last couple of years, and that's why it was important.
Real for an awful lot of people.
Awful lot of people that we may be passing on the sidewalk every day. And so that's why I'm asking her. Mm-hmm. So what haven't I asked?
It's hard to say what haven't you asked because you've answered so many things, but as a mother, I'm just hurt. I'm still scared for what he went through. And you're right about, you know, mothers are the heart of this. And they're at the forefront. I can't speak for them, but I can feel what they feel.
Yeah, you can speak for them. You can. You know. You do. You know.
Mm-hmm. I just want to thank you for coming to Peoria, bringing this to Peoria, and making everyone aware of it, and everybody's on board with it to continue it. Because thank God that they stopped and they didn't shoot him. Because I would be gone as well.
Yep.
That's how I feel about it. He has my heart. He's soft-hearted. But when we asked him about it, he was just tough. You know, because that's what boys do. That's what they want to do. Thanks again.
It's not okay. You know, this is one of the pedal points in the book. And it sort of goes back to what we were talking about a moment ago. We try to, and sometimes we need to be really sophisticated about these issues. But the simple truths are simple and they're true, and this is not okay. It's not okay. And when I was at the big community meeting the other day and I was talking about what happens and just how bad it is, which are things that I know because this is the life I live and that you know because it's happened to and around you. I saw two things. I saw black faces out in the audience nodding because they knew that what I was saying was right. And I saw mostly white faces gasping and looking shocked because they had no idea. And I really honestly believe that if people who don't know themselves understood even a bit of what's going on, that they would care and they would act, because people, ordinary, decent people, can't turn away from this. It's like seeing a drowning kid. You jump in, you do something. That's what ordinary people do. You don't have to be a hero. It's just what you do. But we live racially especially racially. Don't have to make it any more complicated than that. We live such separate lives on this issue. I was out with a camera crew in South Peoria, and they've been putting together some of the spots and such for the Don't Shoot campaign. And one of them was a white youngish man. He's a Peoria resident. And we were in the neighborhood. And he said, I live 8 minutes from here. And until they assigned me to do this work and I came here and I started focusing on it, I had absolutely no idea what was going on. And now he's obsessed with it just like I am. I'm sorry for what happened to you. I'm sorry what happened to your son.
Thank you for letting me come and explain how I feel, which is a lot of people feel that way.
Thank you for being willing to talk about it, Lisa. So let me ask you this before we wrap up. Have you ever seen a community do a Peoria Reads project around your book? Did you ever think that that would happen when you wrote the book?
Never in a million years. I mean, no, honestly, I would not have dared hope for something like that.
We've been talking with David Kennedy, author of the special Peoria Reads book selection, Don't Shoot. The strategy outline in Kennedy's book is the blueprint for the Don't Shoot Peoria initiative aimed at reducing gun violence. I'm Tanya Coons on Peoria Public Radio, 89.9 WCBU. You can listen to this show and our Don't Shoot Peoria Roundtable series on our website, wcbufm.org.